Psalm 18:17 says, "He rescued me from my strong enemy and from those who hated me, for they were too mighty for me. They confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my support. He brought me out into a broad place. He rescued me because he delighted in me." And certainly this psalm captures the blessing and the goodness of God that takes place in this story. Today is the final installment in our study through the book of Esther. And before we get into the final events recorded in this book, I'm asking that you allow me to recount one last time the story up to this point. Now, I realize that some of you have heard the early parts of this story several times over the past few weeks, but there are some new people here who have not heard any of the story up to this point, and there are some here who have missed parts of the story up to this point. So for their benefit, I ask you, let me tell the story one last time to lay the groundwork for the events that take place in the story today. The story of Esther takes place in the great Persian Empire in the capital city of Susa about 2,500 years ago. And during a huge party that King Xerxes was hosting for his officials and other dignitaries, he ordered the queen to appear before him and his guests so that he could show off how beautiful she was. But to his shock and embarrassment, she refused to come. And he was furious. He asked his advisors what he should do. And they told him that he should strip her of the title of queen and banish her forever from his presence. So that's what he did. Well, after the king cooled down, he began to miss the queen. So he asked his advisors again what he should do. He probably had some thinking on his own, but we've discovered that this is the way Xerxes is. And he asked him again, and they told him that a search for a new queen should be made among the most beautiful young women in the empire. And so that was done. The most beautiful young women from all over the Persian Empire were gathered into a special harem in the capital city of Susa. And there, they were put through a rigorous year-long preparation process. And then, one by one, they would be given an opportunity to meet the king. Well, one of the young women who had been taken and put into the special harem was a young Jewish girl named Esther. After losing both of her parents when she was very young, her older cousin Mordecai adopted her as his own daughter, and he raised her, and he instructed Esther to not tell anyone that she was a Jew or that he and she were related. Well, when Esther's turn came to meet the king, his heart was immediately drawn to her. He fell in love with her, and he made her his new queen. Well, why did the king choose Esther over all of the other candidates? It was not her physical beauty. There were, among all of these women, these are the most beautiful women in all of the empire. So it was something more than just her physical beauty. The thing that set Esther apart was her character, her inner beauty. That was the thing that captured the king's heart. 1 Peter 3:4 says, "Let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious." Well, a few years later, a man named Haman duped the king into appointing him as the number two guy in the kingdom, second only to the king in power and authority. And upon his appointment, the king commanded that everyone was to bow down to Haman, showing him special honor. Everyone complied with the king's command except for Mordecai, Esther's adoptive father. He refused to show any kind of honor to Haman, knowing what an evil man he really was. Well, when Haman saw that Mordecai refused to kneel and show him honor, he was enraged, so much so that he looked for a way not only to kill Mordecai, but to wipe out all of the Jewish people in the entire Persian Empire, every man, woman, and child. Haman, he went to the king, and he told him that there was a certain people in the kingdom who were a very dangerous element. To protect the king and the kingdom, these people needed to be exterminated. So the king gave Haman unlimited authority to do with these people whatever he thought best, not realizing that he had just signed a death warrant for his own queen, Esther. See, neither the king nor Haman nor anyone else knew that Esther was a Jew and that Mordecai was her adoptive father. Haman sent an edict in the name of the king throughout the Persian Empire, giving orders that on the 13th day of the 12th month, everyone was to destroy, kill, and annihilate all of the Jews, young and old, women and children, and to plunder their goods. Well, through a trusted messenger, Mordecai told Esther that she needed to immediately go to the king and plead for the lives of her people, the Jews. Well, that sounded simple enough on the surface. But there was a big problem. No one, not even the queen, was allowed to approach the king unless the king summoned them first. Anyone who attempted to approach the king uninvited was immediately executed. The only exception was if, when the person appeared before the king, he extended his gold scepter toward them, indicating that he would allow them to approach and speak. Esther told Mordecai that there was no way that she could just go in and speak to the king. It had been some 30 days since the king had called for her. It appeared the king was unhappy with her in some way. It would be a suicide mission for her to attempt such a thing. Well, Mordecai told her that if she refused to go to the king on behalf of her people, that God would save the Jews some other way, but her family would perish. He pointed out to her that it was no accident that she had become the queen of Persia, that it may have been for this very moment that the Lord had put her in this position. And you know, the same is true for us. We have not been given what we have and not been put in the places that we are in this life just to spend it all on ourselves. There's a larger purpose for our lives than that. Don't spend your time and energy and money on yourself. Live for something larger than you. Become part of the Lord's grand story rather than settle for a cheap little paperback novel about yourself. Esther took the words of Mordecai to heart, and she realized that she had to attempt to speak to the king and plead for her people regardless of the risk for herself. So she asked Mordecai to have all of the Jewish people fast and pray for 3 days, and then she would try to speak to the king, and if she perished, she perished. Well, after the 3 days of fasting and praying, Esther went into the king, stepping into the throne room, not knowing what kind of reception she would receive, but to her great relief and surprise, she was greeted with a smile rather than a sword. The king extended his scepter to her, and he granted to her any request that she wanted, even up to half his kingdom, he said. Well, Esther, she humbly stood before the king, and she told him that her request was simply to invite him to a private banquet that she had prepared for him. She asked the king to bring his friend Haman along with him as well. Well, the king, he summoned Haman immediately, and they went to Esther's banquet. And at the banquet, the king, knowing that Esther was up to something, he asked Esther what her request was, and she asked the king and Haman to come to another banquet the next day, and then she would tell him what she really wanted. Well, Haman, he headed home that day after the banquet, happy and in high spirits. But when he got to the palace gate, there was Mordecai. And just like every other time, Mordecai didn't show any honor to him. And Haman, he was filled with rage. But it says that he managed to control himself until he got home. And when he got home, he bragged to his wife and his friends about his vast wealth and his many children and all of the ways the king had honored him and given him authority over all of the other royal officials, and how he was the only person who had been invited to this special banquet with the king and the queen, and how the queen had invited him back another time the next day for another banquet with just him and the king and the queen. But none of this, he said, gave him any real pleasure as long as the Jew Mordecai was still alive. His wife and his friend suggested that he build a giant gallows and have Mordecai hanged on it. And then He could go to the queen's banquet and be happy. Well, he liked that idea, so he ordered that a gallows be built immediately. That same night, the king had trouble sleeping. So the king had the record of his reign brought in and read to him, and he discovered that he had left a debt of gratitude unpaid to Mordecai for saving his life. Mordecai had uncovered an assassination plot against the king. So the next morning, Haman came into the palace intending to ask the king permission to hang Mordecai on his new gallows that he had built. But before he could ask, the king told him that he wanted to bestow special honor on a certain person for a great deed that they had done. The king asked Haman for his idea about how this certain person should be honored. And Haman, full of himself, automatically assumed that the king had to be talking about him. That he's the one that the king wanted to surely honor. I mean, who else would he want to honor besides Haman? And so, Haman described to him what he would have loved to have done for him. He said, take him and put a royal robe on this person and have him led around the streets of the city on the king's finest horse, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. Well, horror of horrors for Haman, the man the king wanted to honor was Mordecai, the very man Haman hated more than anyone else in the whole world. The king commanded Haman to do exactly as he had suggested for Mordecai, and Haman himself be the one who leads him around the city and makes the proclamation. Well, that was just the beginning of Haman's downfall, because later that day at that second dinner party with the king and the queen, the king asked her what her request was, and the queen told the king that the very man that they were eating with, Haman, had designs to kill the queen and all of her people, the Jews. The king was so angry that he left the room for a moment to gather his thoughts. And while he was gone, Haman fell on the couch before Esther to plead for his life. And just at that moment, the king walked back into the room. He saw Haman stretched out on the couch before the queen, and he immediately assumed that Haman was making a play for his wife. So he ordered that Haman be killed immediately. One of the king's security officers who was there told him that a brand new gallows had just been built by Haman to hang the king's new hero, Mordecai. The king ordered that Haman be hanged on his own gallows, and so he was. The king gave Esther the estate of Haman, gave Mordecai Haman's job at the palace, along with the king's royal signet ring. And we noted that the downfall of Haman serves as a powerful illustration of the truth of Job 4:8, which says, those who plow evil and those who sow trouble reap it. We pick our story up in Esther chapter 8 this morning. If you've got your Bible, you can flip over to Esther chapter 8, and we'll start in verse 3 there. See, although the evil Haman has been brought down, his diabolical plan for having the Jews exterminated is still in effect. The royal decree that had been issued by Haman directing all of the people in the Persian Empire to turn on the Jews and kill them and take their property on the 13th day of the 12th month was still in effect. The lives of the Jewish people are still in serious jeopardy. So in verse 3 of chapter 8, it says, then Esther spoke again to the king. She fell at his feet and wept and pleaded with him to avert the evil plan of Haman the Agagite and the plot that he had devised against the Jews. And when the king held out the golden scepter to Esther, Esther rose and stood before the king, and she said, if it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and if the thing seems right before the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes... Don't you love how they do all of this, you know, introductory stuff? I wish someone would approach me like that once in a while. So it's like, hey, I got something to say to you. She says, let an order be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, which he wrote to destroy the Jews who are in all the provinces of the king. For how can I bear to see the calamity that is coming to my people? Or how can I bear to see the destruction of my kindred? Then King Xerxes said to Queen Esther and to Mordecai the Jew, behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows because he intended to lay hands on the Jews. But you may write as you please with regard to the Jews in the name of the king and seal it with the king's ring, for an edict written in the name of the king and sealed with the king's ring cannot be revoked. The king tells Esther in all of this, Esther and Mordecai, that he can't simply eliminate the decree of Haman. It's irrevocable because it was written in the king's name and sealed with his royal signet ring. So the only alternative available for them is to issue another decree in the king's name, sealed with his ring, that will somehow effectively neutralize the first decree. So, with the approval of the king, Mordecai immediately put the royal secretaries to work drafting another decree, which was sent out throughout all of the vast Persian Empire, just like Haman's decree had been. This new decree granted all of the Jews in the Persian Empire the right to protect themselves, to kill their enemies, and to plunder their enemies' goods on the same day that Haman's decree gave everyone else the right to kill the Jews on the 13th day of the 12th month. Verse 15. Then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal robes of blue and white, with a great golden crown and a robe of fine linen and purple, and the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. And in every province and in every city, wherever the king's command and his edict reached, there was gladness and joy among the Jews, a feast and a holiday. And many from the peoples of the country declared themselves Jews, for fear of the Jews had fallen on them. There are four things that I want us to take note of here in these final verses of chapter 8. First, I want us to look at the honor that has been bestowed on Mordecai. He goes out from the king's presence wearing royal garments of blue and white, a large gold crown on his head, a purple robe. The honor that Haman had wanted for himself is Mordecai's. Proverbs 1:19 says, such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. Haman was such a man. He was greedy for unjust gain, and in the end, it literally took his life away. Mordecai, in contrast, was a person of integrity and good character, and he was eventually rewarded for it. We're told in Galatians 6:9, let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. The true nature of a person will eventually be revealed by the fruit of their life, the product of that which comes from their life, the things that they do. Jesus said in Luke 6:43, for no good tree bears bad fruit, nor again does a bad tree bear good fruit, for each tree is known by its own fruit. For figs are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor are grapes picked from a bramble bush. The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of his evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaks. And Haman and Mordecai are certainly an illustration of this truth. Second thing I want us to notice here is the issuing of the new edict on behalf of the Jews brought about a time of light and gladness and joy and honor. These people, the Jews, had been under a death sentence with no hope. They knew they were going to be attacked and killed and have all of their property taken from them. Their very existence was going to be wiped out, and there was nothing that they could do about it. It's hard to imagine, isn't it, what it would be like to go through life with that kind of dread hanging over your head every day as you cross off the days on the calendar as it approaches that dreadful day, the 13th day of the 12th month. Day by day, it gets closer. But now, with this new edict, they have been transformed from a people who had every ounce of dignity taken from them to a people who have been given special privilege and honor from the king himself to defend themselves from their enemies. Third, verse 15 says, "And the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced," implying that not only the Jews, but all of the people in the city are celebrating. You might remember when Haman issued his horrifying edict to have the Jews slaughtered, it said back in Esther 3:15 that the whole city of Susa was thrown into confusion and bewilderment. The whole city was bewildered and deeply disturbed over the shocking turn of events and seeing so much power given to a madman like Haman. Justice is being reestablished in the kingdom, and it causes all of the people to rejoice and breathe a huge sigh of relief. Proverbs 14:34 says, "Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people." Justice and honesty and integrity in our government is a huge blessing, and it brings a sense of peace and security for everyone. Conversely, the government, when it's blatantly dishonest and unfair and hypocritical, it causes stress and anxiety among the people. Seeing integrity restored in the government by eliminating Haman and appointing a man of integrity like Mordecai in his place, it brings peace and security back to the whole city. Fourth, verse 17 says, "And many from the people of the country declared themselves Jews, for fear of the Jews had fallen on them." Many people, it says, became Jews in the wake of all of this upheaval and the events that are taking place. See, there's a new found respect for these people and their God who had been seen as society's doormat beforehand. Verse 1 of Esther 9, it says, "Now in the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the same, when the king's command and the edict were about to be carried out, on the very day when the enemies of the Jews hoped to gain the mastery over them, the reverse occurred. The Jews gained mastery over those who hated them. The Jews gathered in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Xerxes to lay hands on those who sought their harm, and no one could stand against them, for the fear of them had fallen on all peoples. All the officials of the provinces and the satraps and the governors and the royal agents also helped the Jews, for the fear of Mordecai had fallen on them. For Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces, for the man Mordecai grew more and more powerful. The Jews struck all of their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying them, and did as they pleased to those who hated them. In Susa, the citadel itself, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men, and also killed the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, but they laid no hand on the plunder." You saw I jumped past those 10 names, because there are none of us in this room who could say those names. When the 13th day of the 12th month arrived, the Jews throughout the Persian Empire protected themselves from their enemies. They fought back against them and they killed them, including these 10 sons of Haman. In verse 10, the last sentence there is what I want us to take special note of. It says, "They laid no hand on the plunder." So although the Jews had been given permission by the king's edict to take the property of their slain enemies, they didn't touch any of it. And by not taking any of their enemies' property, the Jews were honoring God, and they were demonstrating that they did not have personal gain at heart in any of this. They only sought protection from those who wanted to kill them. And you know, the same kind of thing was practiced many times in the Old Testament by the Jewish people when God would give his people victory over their enemies. The plunder was left untouched, and it was given as an offering to the Lord, dedicated to him as an acknowledgement that the victory was his. He's the one who brought this great victory. And so we see the same thing taking place here with these folks. Well, Esther, she asked the king to grant the Jews in the capital city of Susa an additional day to fight against their enemies and to kill them. Apparently, as evidenced by Haman, there was a lot of very deep-seated hatred of the Jews among some of the people in the capital city. So the king granted her request and gave them one additional day. Verse 20, and Mordecai recorded these things and sent letters to all the Jews who were in all the provinces of King Xerxes, both near and far, obliging them to keep the 14th day of the month of Adar and also the 15th day of the same year by year as the days on which the Jews got relief from their enemies and as the month that had been turned for them from sorrow into gladness and from mourning into a holiday, that they should make them days of feasting and gladness, days for sending gifts and food to one another and gifts to the poor. To commemorate the great victory that the Lord had given the Jewish people, Mordecai established the 14th day and the 15th day of the month of Adar as a special Jewish holiday. And 23 describes this further. It says, so the Jews accepted what they had started to do and what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them and had cast lots to crush and to destroy them. But when it came before the king, he gave orders in writing that his evil plan that he had devised against the Jews should return on his own head and that he and his son should be hanged on the gallows. Therefore, they called these days Purim after the term Pur. Therefore, because of all that was written in this letter and of what they had faced in this matter and of what had happened to them, the Jews firmly obliged themselves and their offspring and all who joined them that without fail they would keep these 2 days according to what was written and at the time appointed every year, that these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation in every clan, province, and city, and that these days of Purim should never fail or fall into disuse among the Jews, nor should the commemoration of these days cease among their descendants. And so the Jewish people still have the festival of Purim that they celebrate to this day, honoring and remembering what the Lord did for his people here in the story of Esther, destroying their enemy Haman. The last sentence of the last chapter says this, for Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Xerxes, and he was great among the Jews and popular with the multitude of his brothers, for he sought the welfare of his people and spoke peace to all the people. Great words to have spoken about you at the end of your life. Amen. In closing, I just want to say the book of Esther speaks a message of tremendous hope for the people of God. First, the Lord, he's watching over his people, taking care of them. He will never leave you or forsake you. He stood by his people in Esther's day, and he will stand by you in your day too. No matter how bleak it may look to you, you are not alone. You have not been abandoned. Second, the all-powerful hand of the Lord is more than able to accomplish his will, and he will do it. There is no power or personality in this world that can thwart him. Third, let's follow the example of Esther and Mordecai, who trusted in the Lord even in the middle of what appeared to be the greatest disaster imaginable. They were fully committed to the Lord. They made themselves available to him, and in return, he used them to accomplish good in this world. Serve the Lord in your day too. Finally, recognize the possibilities that exist for where you are at in life right now. Who knows but that you have come to the position that you have in life right now for such a time as this? just like Esther, was queen for such a time. The Lord is at work right now. Be part of that work. Choose to be part of the great story of God rather than just living for yourself. This is where you will find true and fulfilling joy in life. Finally, the thing that I want to do just quickly is I want to talk a little bit about the Purim celebration so that you know what that is. And we see how in it God is honored. Purim is one of the most joyful of all of the Jewish holidays. It has been called the Jewish Mardi Gras. The word Purim means lots, and it refers to the casting of lots that Haman had done to determine the day that he was going to exterminate the Jews, if you'll remember in this story. The Purim celebration is also sometimes called the Festival of Lots. Purim is celebrated on the 14th day of Adar, which is usually in March. The next one coming up is March 11, 2017. You might want to put that on your calendar and jump on this celebration. One of the teachings that comes out of the story of Esther is how God often works in ways that are not immediately obvious. He works behind the scenes oftentimes. It may appear to be mere chance and circumstances, but in reality, the sovereign hand of God is always present, working everything out for his ultimate will and our ultimate good. And this idea is one of the things that comes out in many of the things that are part of the Purim celebration. The celebration itself, there is usually a minor fast on the day before Purim to celebrate and commemorate those 3 days of fasting and prayer that Esther and the people did before she attempted to speak to the king. And then on the day of Purim, the book of Esther is read. The book of Esther is referred to as the Megillah, which means scroll. And some of the scrolls for Purim are very decorative. You may be able to make out some of the illustrations that surround the text in the scroll on the top left. On that scroll are illustrations of Haman's proclamation being carried throughout the empire to have all of the Jews killed. The king extending his scepter to Esther, allowing her to speak to him. Haman honoring Mordecai, leading him around the city on the king's horse. Esther's dinner party with the king and Haman. Haman pleading for his life before Esther. And then finally, Haman hanging from the gallows that he had built. And that's in the top left illustration. Up there you can see him swinging from a rope. A beautiful thing. It's customary for people in the audience to boo, to hiss, to stamp their feet and rattle noisemakers that they call graggers whenever the name of Haman is mentioned while the story is being read. So as they're reading along and then the name Haman comes up and you're like, ah, boo, to drown out his name. And that's the idea of it, that Haman's name is to be blotted out, the name of their enemy. Here are some of the graggers or noise makers. The ones in the top right, those are some old ones from days gone by. You see some of the modern cheap plastic ones down in the lower right. And then some of my favorites are the ones made out of Legos in the top left. You're to eat and drink to be merry on this day. The Talmud actually says, quote, a person is to drink until he can't tell the difference between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordecai. Some of you are going, man, this old Jewish thing has gotten really good. Some have said it means to drink until you can't tell the difference between good and bad. Now, there are differing opinions about how much drinking needs to be done for that to accomplish, but you get the idea. The idea behind drinking until you can't tell the difference between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordecai is that From our limited perspective, there is a difference, but from God's infinite perspective, there is no difference because he works it all out for ultimate good. Whether it is Haman or Mordecai, we are all going to serve under God's sovereign hand, and he's going to bring good out of things that look bad to us. God is working everything out for his ultimate good and purpose. Now, please don't leave today thinking that I have advocated getting drunk. No letters, please. No emails. No tweets. No texts. I am merely sharing with you some of the Jewish traditions that are surround this holiday of Purim. A carnival-type celebration is held with plays, parodies, beauty contests. These are some of the photos of actual Purim celebrations taking place. There's people wearing masks over here. There's a play. This is obviously Haman being led by a stand-in guard. People here dressed up as, you know, Persian peoples and Jews in costumes. And over here, there's the white and blue of royalty, like Mordecai was dressed in. This is all to commemorate various elements of the story. People would wear masks oftentimes in the same way that Esther's true identity was hidden from everyone except Mordecai until the end. God's presence is hidden from everyone until the end. Everything appears to be going one way and then it goes another way in the end. It's a story that's wrapped in disguise, hidden behind a costume, concealed behind a mask until the end. And this is the idea of why people dress up in costumes and wear masks on Purim. Kind of like Halloween for us, I suppose. A common treat that's given out and eaten at Purim are hamantaschen, which are triangular-shaped fruit-filled cookies. The word, when translated into English, literally means Haman's pockets or Haman's ears. Now, some believe that the cookies are supposed to represent this three-cornered hat that Haman supposedly wore. Others claim that the cookies literally represent Haman's ears, referring to the ancient practice of cutting off the condemned criminal's ears before they are executed. I don't know about all that, but they don't taste like ears. They actually are good. And we have some hamantaschen cookies for you to try today. Now, in the past, I've actually made the hamantaschen myself, but I didn't have time to do that this year. I asked Patty Hawkins if her and her crew of people would do that, and she graciously accepted that challenge. This is what they look like. Anyways, there are hamantaschen cookies in the fellowship hall for you this morning, so make sure you swing by there on your way out and grab one. It'll be a fun way for you to conclude this story and kind of cement it into your mind. Psalm 18:17. He rescued me from my strong enemy and from those who hated me, for they were too mighty for me. They confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my support. He brought me out into a broad place. He rescued me because he delighted in me. Let's bow our heads for a moment. Father, we thank you for this story of Esther and the great reminder that it is of your goodness and how you watch over and protect your people. You're looking out for us, Lord. Lord, we thank you too for the reminder that it gives us that there's a purpose for each of our lives. That we're here for such a time as this to be used by you, to be part of your great story of what you're doing in this world. I pray, God, that you would call all of your people into this story and that we would live for you rather than ourselves. In Jesus' name, amen.